Coming to you from the ancestral territory of the Anishinaabe and the area inhabited by the Haudenosaunee and the Mississaugas of the Credit First Nation, this is Earth Matters. I'm your host, Lawson Hunter. Earth Matters examines the impacts we have on the environment and the natural world around us, seeking solutions, reporting on news and events, presenting positive alternatives, and highlighting the steps others are taking. We hope to inspire you to join the many others who are working to preserve and protect a healthy planet. The Indigenous Clean Energy Social Enterprise, ICE, is a pan-Canadian, not-for-profit platform which advances Indigenous inclusion in Canada's energy futures economy through Indigenous leadership and broad-based collaboration with energy companies, utilities, governments, development firms, clean tech innovators, the academic sector, and capital markets. I spoke with Aaron Stewart, director of the 2020 Catalyst Program. Welcome to Earth Matters, Aaron. Tell us about Indigenous Clean Energy and the exciting program 2020 Catalyst.
Sure, of course. And thank you so much for having me. So the Indigenous Clean Energy Social Enterprise is a not-for-profit, and our not-for-profit is focused on advancing the Indigenous inclusion and leadership in the clean energy sector. We have communities that participate in our programming from all across Canada, and they have had extreme impacts and incredible impacts in their communities on this file. So we also run within ICE a program called the 2020 Catalyst Program. And this is a national Indigenous clean energy capacity building program that we run every summer. And essentially at the core, what we do is we have 3-week-long intensive sessions, and we cover everything soup to nuts around clean energy, whether that be energy efficiency and conservation, building a renewable energy project, energy education for youth and elders and community members, community energy planning, how do you finance projects, employment opportunities. So we cover a whole spectrum of different opportunities in the clean energy sector, and essentially try to motivate and empower communities to lead their own projects in their own way. And we support them in doing that through mentorship with partners. And the program's actually led by about 35 different mentors from all across Canada. And these are a combination of Indigenous clean energy leaders who have done their own project in their own communities, as well as different technical support mechanisms, or technical support mentors. So they may be a lawyer that focuses on how to get a project off the ground, or an economic development officer, or an engineer who helps build the project. So we use a different combination of both community, Indigenous community support leaders, as well as technical mentors at our programming core.
That sounds like a fantastic program. A number of questions come from it. One of them is obviously, why the Indigenous community? Why are you focused on that group?
We run an organization called Lumos Energy, and that was run by my boss and colleague, Chris Henderson. And he worked specifically with Indigenous communities on building clean energy projects in their communities for about 20 years now. And what he saw was through this process that the most successful projects, so projects that got off the ground and actually going, were those that had strong Indigenous leadership, not those that necessarily had a consultant come in and do the work, but those that actually built capacity. And that's why we felt the need to launch this not-for-profit and the initiatives that we have within ICE is the projects. If we actually want to move towards a renewable energy future, we need strong Indigenous leadership at its core. And I think also one of the reasons why communities have been so interested in clean energy is because it meets a lot of the time with community values. And I mean, communities can speak to that better than I, but that is what was what motivated me to come into this sector. Is I saw a number of different projects. These were economic development opportunities for communities, but a lot of the time they were degrading the land. They were maybe something that provided economic development opportunities, but maybe not as many social opportunities, or, you know, and what I felt at my core, at least, was that clean energy offered an opportunity to provide social benefit, health benefits, economic benefits, and still stay true to Indigenous values. And I thought that was really something that you don't see often. And yeah, it's just been incredible to see what communities have done with that.
What kind of energy projects are we talking about? Are we talking the typical solar panels and wind turbines, or what are we talking about?
Yeah, all different types. So I think there's many different types of diesel replacement projects. You know, as you mentioned, solar and wind may be some of them, but there's also hydro projects being built in very remote areas. There's also, you know, in some cases, big transmission lines that are being connected to remote communities. District heating as another one. Some are doing more energy efficiency projects as just a way to reduce their diesel load. So there's a number. I mean, I wouldn't put a limit in terms of what you can do in small remote communities versus in major municipalities. And something that is also kind of an interesting feature is if you look at the amount of municipalities in Canada that have clean energy projects, it is only a fraction of those that Indigenous communities have been involved with. There is over 150 Indigenous community energy projects over 1 megawatt, and there's not many municipalities can say that. So in terms of advancement, they've been able to do so much.
Now, I heard you mention diesel reduction. Mm-hmm. Is this the primary reason for a renewable energy project to, say, replace the diesel up in the remote parts of Canada that is a typical source of energy?
I would say right now, diesel reduction is definitely a hot topic of interest. And as a result, it's a primary focus on climate change mitigation as a means to reduce, and using clean energy as a means to reduce diesel emissions. So yes, I would say for the most part, but then there's also, you know, a number of health benefits from reducing diesel. So yeah, the focus is reducing diesel so the diesel is gone, but it's not just for the pure, you know, climate change motivations, but just how noisy diesels are, how unhealthy it is for the community. There's like a lot of varying factors as to why diesel should be reduced.
Let's talk about the finances. A, does it save money? B, and who's paying for the installation? And are they making their money back over an amortized time?
I would say that's pretty situational. There's been a lot of programming specifically through Natural Resources Canada, through the Clean Energy for Rural and Remote Communities program, that has provided support to communities that are looking on to take some of these projects and provided subsidies to do so. And as a result, the equation becomes a lot closer in terms of finances, in terms of how a renewable energy project could be affordable. I think that, you know, without the subsidies, it would be hard to make the cost for renewables comparable to diesel. But currently, as it stands with the support mechanisms that there are, it's definitely plausible and definitely financially doable.
Are these projects co-financed by other organizations, or is it strictly 100% the Indigenous community funding it?
No, there's usually co-partnerships. So it could be a 50-50 partnership in some cases that we're looking at right now. I can't really speak about the specific projects right now at the moment. But yeah, no, definitely. There's a lot of people that are looking to get into the game in different ways, shapes, and forms.
And what about the participants from the Indigenous communities? Who are they? What's the makeup? And what kind of response are you getting from someone who never thought that they would be working on a renewable energy project? Who on the ground is working on these projects?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think there is a combination of a lot of different individuals and entities that are working on these files. So, you know, there's a huge support and interest specifically from developers at the moment to get involved with these projects. So sometimes they are the ones that are helping lead these projects. There's a number of not-for-profits as well that are working, whether that be on the community engagement side or working with the communities in terms of how they can get grants or access to funding or financing. There's other partners or angel investors that are interested in it. But at the core, I would say it's the communities that are leading, and it's usually led by an energy champion. And this is kind of where we focus our efforts in terms of ICE as well, is, you know, how do we support those energy champions? Because if we're looking at somebody in the community, if they're taking on the role of building a clean energy project, they're usually wearing that hat and then about seven other hats as well within the community in terms of their own role. And so we just try to provide as much support as we possibly can to enable them to do that role most effectively. But yeah, it's usually at the core probably about one or two energy champions that are kind of pushing forward these initiatives and then trying to figure out the different players that might want to participate with.
You're talking about the economic benefit of obviously, you know, reducing costs when it comes to energy, but what about construction jobs or installation? Mm-hmm. You know, does the community get involved in that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I wish my colleague, her name's Terry Lynn Morrison, and she's now our Director of Strategies and Partnerships, but she also, before she started working with us, actually worked on a 150-megawatt wind project in her communities. And the number of employment, I think it was somewhere along in the construction, I want to say 400 jobs, but don't quote me on that one. But it's definitely in terms of when you're negotiating a partnership contract or a construction contract, ensuring that Indigenous inclusion and employment opportunities are there is something that's been critical. And there's been many ways in which to encourage community members to get out. The best thing I can recommend is early planning. I mean, I think one of the major issues in terms of where there could be more employment opportunities is that sometimes as soon as you get into project mode, it moves so quickly. And to get people trained and prepared to actually take on those jobs is actually the most difficult part. If they have the training and they're ready to go, they can take on those construction jobs. But it's kind of the pre-training that needs to go into that and the time to do it. And I think, you know, if there's developers that are listening to this and they're considering working with an Indigenous community, doing that training early and often is something I can't recommend enough. Because if you're not thinking about the training in the early days, when actually it comes time for constructions, you're not going to hit those employment targets.
Tell me a bit more about 2020 Catalyst and how that operates.
So the 2020 Catalyst program, we just updated our fourth year. And through our programming, we've actually had 82 participants go through our programming, and they've been from coast to coast to coast, from the far west to the farthest north, actually the farthest community in the mainland in the north, to the furthest east. They represent every province and territory except for PEI right now. And it's the strength in numbers that I think has been so important and incredible about this network. It's the fact that they can walk into a room or an energy conference and maybe find some strength in the fact that they know these people and they know that content. And I think, if anything, the program provides them with that strength and that encouragement and that network of resources to be able to call on a mentor or a colleague or one of us and say, hey, I'm running into this issue with our program or our project and I need some help. You know, I think when running one of these projects and being one of the only people in your community that's talking about energy, it can be quite isolating. And so in essence, 2020 and ICE provides them with that network of people and collaborators to be able to work with and on a continuous basis. And in terms of our participants, I mean, we've been so fortunate to have such a range of people. We've had chiefs, we've had economic development officers, we've had climate change coordinators, it just goes on and on, the list goes on and on. But we've also had gender representation and age representation. It's actually quite amazing. So in our 4 years of the participants, there's been 34% women, and that is well higher than industry standards. So in the clean energy sector, there's only about 18% women, and of those, there's only about 5 to 6% in technical or leadership roles. And for us to be able to have 34% women is just something that I'm really proud of as a woman. And also on our youth representation, too, I think that youth are often siloed to certain positions and taking on certain projects. But when we're looking at these energy champions or these climate change champions in Indigenous communities, they are technically youth, ranging in the ages of 18 to 30. And we've had 45% youth. And I'm really ecstatic to be able to say that, you know, we don't need to talk about the generations of the future. The future is now, and they're doing those projects on the ground right now.
Dustin Fournier is a member of the Beaver First Nation from the Childs Lake, Boyer River communities in the Treaty 8 territory. After spending 12 years in the oil and gas industry, Dustin enrolled in the 2018-2020 Catalyst program and now operates Beaver First Nations Land and Resources Department.
So renewable energy wasn't something I ever planned on doing. Like, I was oil field for a better part of my life. So I'm 33 years old now. I was 17 when I started in the patch. So up until last year, I was all oil field. You know, I was pro oil and everything. I was a guy who never thought I'd go to use solar power or wind turbines or anything like that. When the oil fields started slowing down here in the patch or in Alberta, my chief from our reservation said that there was a lands consultation job coming up that you'd like me to apply for it. So since there was other work if I wanted it, but I got 6 kids now, and being home a lot more was appealing to me, so I applied for the job, even though it was quite a cut in my pay. But I learned to adapt to it. And as soon as I got in, I was thrown into some projects I knew nothing about. I knew nothing about how to come up with contracts or agreements for renewable energy. You know, I was in oil fields for 16 years. That's all I knew. So I started signing up for workshops, pretty much everything I could find on renewable energy, and I ended up at actually one of the 2020 catalysts from this year with us was Charlene, and she was the one holding this climate change seminar in Edmonton, where we went there and we kind of seen what kind of projects were going on through Alberta and how we can get into those. And there was a young man named Calvin Miguan from the Fort Chipewyan band. And he was a very inspirational kid. He talked about the 2020 Catalyst program and what it did for him and like what he learned and the projects he's doing. And he's making a lot of big moves. And I'm like, well, geez, that sounds like something I need to look into. So later that week, I actually went online. I saw that they're taking applications for, I only had a week to apply or 2 weeks to apply. And so I applied, I got a call. I actually bombed the phone interview. It was terrible. I had no idea what to say or anything. So I ended up emailing Ian Schulten, one of the directors there. Emailed him back and apologized for the interview. I was, I wasn't prepared for it. And this is what I did right now. I explained where I'm coming from and how I'm doing and what I need to do for my kitty. And They gracefully sent me an email back about a week and a half later saying I was accepted. So I didn't really know what I was getting into, and I was kind of nervous the first week. I thought there was going to be kind of judgmental people, but it turned out to be one of the greatest experiences I've ever got the chance to be a part of. The program is like nothing else. The people in there, the people they introduce you to, the places they take you, the things they teach you is just amazing. It helped me and my community hugely. I mean, I took almost every day I took a little bit or a lot from everything I learned and incorporated it to what we do now.
How big is your community?
Our community is not very big. So we have about 1,100 members total, but only about 500 of them live on the reserve. So we have two communities. There's Boyer River and there's Childs Lake. Mm-hmm. So with those combined, it's about 500 people.
Was the idea to go renewable, was that more of an economic development driver, or was it to help give people a job?
It was a little bit of everything, right? It was looking at how we can live a greener life. It was looking at how we could improve our way of life as well. And doing that, we need employment, and that's what green energy does. It brings employment to those who need it. Like, you don't need to have a degree to install panels. You just need to go for a week-long training session. Mm-hmm. Now, to tie those panels into the grid, you need an electrician, but we could always hire that electrician. But it employed about 8 of our members so far for our projects.
And what did the community do for energy electricity before that?
Well, we just live off the grid. I believe Alberta's energy is mostly coal still.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're pretty well tied in. Like, we're not off the grid. We're not that isolated. You know, we actually have a paved road going, about a 4 mile paved road going to our school now. We have transmission lines going all over the place. You know, we're actually pretty well, because all that's surrounding our community is agriculture, so there's nothing but fields and houses and farms.
Mm-hmm. How big is the project that you've worked on?
So the biggest project I've worked on so far is a 65.7 solar garden. I am working on a 60 megawatt solar farm right now. We are doing our feasibility studies and energy planning, trying to get out there with the community, and now we're just working, looking to hire some lawyers and other technicians in order to move this further.
What's the reaction been from the community?
The community loves it. I had a green energy job fair in August where I brought in two of our big sawmills out in the area that have brought in, who are doing mass production or biomass plants in one. And they just pretty much showed their initiatives towards green energy and renewable resources, and also explain what kind of jobs those created when they brought up those projects, what it's going to save for them. And actually, we were able to, a couple of our members actually applied right there to do a job for with Toco and Norbord, and they're now working with those mills. Then we also brought up EcoFit. We had energy saving kits built where there's like LED lighting, low flow water faucets, 24-hour timer, heavy-duty timer for your engine block heaters, so they don't have to be plugged into the, they will be plugged in, but they'll be turned on at a certain time to allow that engine to warm up instead of constantly keeping that engine warm. And just those boxes went quick. As soon as I pulled those boxes out, it was just like a stampede to them. I couldn't even pass them out. The community has reacted very well to all this. They like the idea. They like the idea of getting away from oil, even though, like I say, it's still going to be commonly used here for a while, but if we can have a different alternative, then that's great.
Mm-hmm. Always good to have a backup plan. So what percentage of the energy that's used by the community is generated by the community?
Unfortunately, none of our houses or our residents are under solar yet. Right now, it's just our commercial buildings. That's what, and really once we probably won't have any houses now for another at least 5 years, because when we get the solar farm in place, we'll be using the revenue from that to then retrofit our houses.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll take out the windows, we'll replace them with more insulated, efficient window panes, and we'll pretty much do whatever we can to bring them up to par.
Yeah, so it sounds like by going on this plan, you and the community have learned a lot about green energy and retrofits and everything else. And would you say it's a game changer? It's really opened everybody's eyes to what the possibilities are?
Oh, very much so. It's hard to explain when you see people's reaction from all this, especially the kids. You know, like on the green energy fair, I had everything I gave away was solar powered. It had to be solar powered, right? And when they seen all even these toys that were solar powered, or filtering systems for water that are also solar powered and use natural materials to filter their water, everybody thought it was pretty cool. You know, the reaction that the community is putting in is great. They're getting behind it, and we're actually looking at, for next year, trying to send some more people to 2020 Catalyst, because, like I say, it changed my life. And just with the information I was able to, even from the first week. So as soon as I got in the first class, within 15 minutes of the first class, I was messaging our chief and council, telling them what we were doing was a community energy plan. And when I was sitting there listening to Aaron Stewart talk, I realized that our community energy plan that we had done, that we paid someone $120,000 to do for us, was nothing like a community energy plan should have been.
Hmm.
After showing Erin that community energy plan, she looked through the first 10 pages and she came into me and she said, "You know what, I've seen this energy plan before. I've worked with this company before, and this is just pretty much cut and paste, just changing the name."
Yeah.
You know, Erin Stewart was a huge help. I mean, she's a great person. I mean, she's the thing that 2020 admin is doing, they're not just changing individual lives, they're changing nations, you know. They give us those tools, we go back and we help our people, and they're changing thousands of lives at a time without even knowing it. They say, the 15 minutes of listening to your talk, I was messaging back Chief of Council saying, we need to get that company on the phone, get them to revise this whole community energy plan, because this is nothing like it should be.
Yeah.
We didn't know what a community energy plan was. They came up, they asked us questions, and like, okay, we answered them. That was it. We didn't know what a community energy plan was. We didn't know what any of this renewable energy planning was either.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just, we were being taken advantage for and just given work, and we're like, okay, how are we supposed to say no to the work they do when we don't even know what it is they're doing?
Yeah. Tell me about some of the other people you met at those classes from around the province or across the country, right?
Yeah, well, geez, so many people. I mean, they give us 45 mentors and coaches throughout Canada, and then just the people that they also meet. At the end of every week, we kind of had an opening for people to come in. And the people, everywhere we went, there was people that were inspirational, you know. When we started off in BC on Victoria, our Salt Spring Island, and our last 2 days, we went touring other First Nations and just seeing what they did and where they're at now, I kind of see how far behind my nation was. And being able to see what's out there for First Nations was huge, because there's a lot of things out there we're missing that we're not even part of.
Yeah.
Like AJ, I can't pronounce his last name properly, AJ Esquaga from Gull Bay First Nation. He was a huge inspiration for me. He showed up as a mentor. I had I talked to him for a few hours, a few hours a day while he was there, and until he went up and did his presentation, I never knew he was a 2020 catalyst from 2017.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and to see where he went in the past 2 years was a huge inspiration. Like, what he did for his community and how he brought power distributors to the table and got them to do restitution with their nation from the projects that they did that affected their nation.
Hmm.
I mean, there's Terry Lynn. She's now with Admin. I can't remember her last name. Terry Lynn Morrison, I believe. I can't remember the nation she's from in Quebec, but they have a 260 megawatt solar or wind farm, which was went on to be a 12-year plus project. And this is the amount of revenue that it's brought in for them, and the things that it was able to change for them was also inspirational. It was a huge eye opener. Once I got to share these stories with my nation and show them where these nations started with nothing. Now where they are now because of renewable energy, it was one of the things that the nation really caught their eye. Because one of the things we face, we really have a hard time facing, is revenue. Like, we live off, our band lives off $700,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got 500 people to look after, that's not a whole lot of money.
So what would you say to other First Nation communities that might be listening? What would you say to them about the program?
Apply. The worst thing you can do is not apply. I mean, the worst thing you can do is not participate. Once you're in there, just go in there with your eyes open and don't be shy to share your story. Don't be scared of what people are going to think, because there's so much support in that. There's so much support in that program. It's unbelievable. I went back, every time I went there, I came back a better person. The program is like nothing else, and the nation is very interested in going towards renewable energy. I highly recommend they take that 2020 CalEx program.
All right.
They'll help you develop your project, and they'll show you what you need to get done.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great program. So thank you very much, Dustin, for telling us about it, and all the best to you and your community. Lawson Hunter here, host and producer of Earth Matters. I wanted to thank all the listeners of Earth Matters for your continuing support. As always, please feel free to send us your comments, suggestions, and thoughts on topics and people we should look at for future programs. Email us at earthmatters@newsandcomment.com. News and comment.com.